Hello, this is Mary, and I'll be reading selections from the Daily Pantograph from Monday, August 24th, 2026. From the front page of the paper is a story in photos entitled Sunflower Days at Raider Family Farms, and it is showing a number of pictures of people who were out at the Sunflowers Day Festival at Raider Family Farms in Normal on Saturday, including young Drew Bunch, 14 months old, from Decatur, smiling as her family takes a photo of her. Bumblebees hunting for nectar on top of a sunflower. 6-year-old Lizzie Peterson of Sheffield, Illinois, swinging at the Sunflowers Days Festival. Bloomington's Roberta Butcher trimming a zinnia for her bouquet. And a picture of families and visitors walking through the acres of flowers during Sunflower Days Festival at Raider Family Farms in Normal. Also from the front page, tariffs, beef tariffs to be lowered. National Cattlemen's Beef Association criticizes Trump. From the USA Today Network, Washington. President Donald Trump says he will ease tariffs on up to 300,000 metric tons of ground beef imported into the United States for the next 90 days in a bid to reduce the prices Americans are paying for the grocery staple ahead of the November midterm election. Trump, in a social media post Friday, said he reached a deal for foreign ground beef exporters to sell their product at a 25% discount in exchange for not paying U.S. out-of-quota tariffs on foreign beef. The president is expected to sign an executive order within the next 2 weeks formalizing the move, a White House official said. This deal will reduce prices for Americans while giving space for our great American beef herd to grow again, Trump said. The price of beef and veal was up 9.4% in the United States in July over the previous year, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, as year-over-year inflation eased slightly from June. Stubborn inflation poses a major challenge politically for Trump and Republicans in the midterm election as they look to maintain control of Congress. Trump's move comes as imported beef into the United States increased dramatically, up 122% in 5 years, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation, as the supply of domestic cattle remains at multi-decade lows, following years of drought, the sprout of the parasitic New World screwworm near the Mexican border, and other factors. The American Cattlemen's Beef Association criticized Trump's action. While Trump's America's cattle producers share the goal of keeping groceries affordable for consumers, flooding the market with government-subsidized below-market beef is not the way to rebuild the American cattle herd, the group said in a statement. Under the tariff quota system, varying amounts of imported beef from each country can be imported into the United States at substantially lower tariffs before higher out-of-quota tariffs apply. A May report from the American Farm Bureau Federation said U.S. beef imports entering under quota generally face a tariff of just 4.4 cents per kilogram, while imports above quota face a 26.4% tariff. A White House official who discussed the move on the condition of anonymity said Trump's deal on ground beef is intended to be a short-term action to fill a gap to meet consumer demand. The Trump administration will simultaneously work with ranchers to expand domestic beef production for the long term, the official said. It was not immediately clear which countries Trump struck a deal with. The president declined to say which nations were part of the agreement during a question-and-answer session with reporters. Senator Tim Sheehy, Republican Montana, a Trump ally from one of the nation's largest cattle states, said he urged the president not to take the action, saying it will further harm ranchers, most of whom are MAGA Republicans. The president's heart is in the right place in wanting lower prices for the American people, and beef prices have been impacted by the Mexican screwworm, Sheehy wrote in a social media post. But the reality is this action will make it more difficult for American ranchers to rebuild our herds and bring prices down for the American people. Senator Deb Fischer, Republican Nebraska, another state where ranching is central to its economy, says she is extremely disappointed by Trump's decision. We all want lower grocery prices, but I've said for months we cannot do it at the expense of American producers. Flooding the market with foreign beef hurts our livestock industry and undermines the long-term solution, growing the U.S. cattle herd to meet demand, Fisher said. Meanwhile, Trump's promised 50% tariffs on some Canadian goods went into effect just after midnight Saturday, after the United States and its northern neighbor failed to reach a trade agreement. The tariffs were announced in a July 20th executive order and were initially scheduled to take effect Wednesday, but Trump put a three-day pause on tariffs, saying the two countries were making a deal. Both sides of the negotiating table blamed the other for crumbling trade negotiations. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney said in a statement posted to social media that he was suspending trade negotiations with the United States and ordering Canadian negotiators to return to Ottawa. They have worked hard, in good faith, to defend the interests of Canadians throughout these negotiations, up until the very last minute, Carney said. However, last-minute changes in the U.S. proposed terms were unfair, uneconomic, and called into question the reliability of any deal. Carney said Canada would match the tariffs dollar for dollar with retaliatory tariffs coming in September. Details of those actions will be released in the coming days, Carney said in a speech. The Office of U.S. Trade Representative Jameson Greer said in a statement that Canada declined to finalize the deal. Despite the U.S. offer to Canada to receive the best treatment of any major exporter to our market, new demands and walkbacks of other commitments by Canada have upended the careful balance reached in the past days, Greer's office said. In addition, Canada is continuing to maintain its prolonged retaliation against the United States, including, among other things, flat-out prohibitions on certain American goods and services. The tariffs apply to just over 5% of Canadian exports to the United States, including on various goods such as wine, dairy, hockey sticks, and cement. Carney said about $28 billion worth of goods would be tariffed. They do not apply to exempted goods, including energy, potash, fish, and critical minerals. The tariffs do not qualify for preferential treatment under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement, which shielded much of Canadian goods from earlier U.S. tariffs. In announcing the tariffs last month, Trump said he aimed to counteract the burden and disadvantage on U.S. commerce from Canada's discriminatory treatment of U.S. commerce. He has also previously threatened tariffs on Canada over wildfire smoke pouring south into the United States. Trump administration officials previously told reporters, on the condition of anonymity, that Canadian trade practices on alcohol, automobiles, and dairy products exported from the United States prompted the action. Turning to page 2 of the Monday, August 24th edition of the Pantograph, today's Flick Fact. Today's question. One of those many Twin Cities streets that battled rising water during those heavy rains was Archie Avenue, a one-block street between Fell Avenue and Broadway in Normal, coincidentally named for a guy famous for high waters. Do you know him? Today's answer. Archie Avenue is named for Archie Harris, a legendary longtime swimming coach at Illinois State University from 1957 to 1981, who also was beloved as a director of the Easter Seals camp on Lake Bloomington for nearly 20 years. It was Ames Street before Archie became such a success, nice guy, and humanitarian to boot. They renamed a street after him. Archie Harris was 92. He passed in 2017. Turning to page 3, politics. Illinois GOP hope to flip legislative seats. Candidates, voters concerned with cost of living, by Ben Zielinski, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Illinois Republicans are hoping to buck historic midterm election trends by focusing on affordability and Democratic scandals in the state house as they seek to emerge from super-minority status. President Donald Trump remains deeply unpopular in Illinois, and midterm elections have spelled bad news throughout the U.S. history for the party that holds the White House. But Democratic corruption and sexual harassment scandals have dominated this summer's headlines in Illinois politics, and state tax burdens remain higher in Illinois than in most other states. These factors have GOP leaders of the General Assembly optimistic that this election represents an opportunity to gain ground. There's a lot of things going on in Illinois that certainly is motivating voters, and I think the voter turnout is going to be what's instrumental in winning additional seats this year, House Republican leader Tony McCombie, Republican Savannah, told Capital News Illinois on Thursday at Republican Day at the State Fair in Springfield. Candidate after candidate on Thursday said most of their conversations with voters come back to issues, especially cost of living and high taxes. Governor J.B. Pritzker and Democrats would prefer to make this year's election a referendum on Trump. At their Democrat Day events on Wednesday, they hammered Republicans for supporting the war in Iran, which has raised gas prices, and tariffs, which has more broadly increased prices. Senate Republican leader John Curran, Republican Downers Grove, told supporters at a state party meeting on Thursday that Republicans should make this year's election a referendum on Democrats, taxes, and spending. This election is a referendum on J.B. Pritzker and his failed economic policies for the state of Illinois, Curran said in an interview. We have to talk about the Illinois story here, not what's happening nationally. Targets for ouster. Republicans have been in the super minority in the House since 2018, but they've since held ground, preserving 40 of 118 seats. It's been worse on the Senate side, where the party has been in the super minority since 2012 and currently holds 19 of 59 seats. This year, several legislative races are expected to be close, including for some seats held by GOP incumbents, especially in the suburbs. Representative Martin McLaughlin, Republican Barrington Hills, is facing Democrat Maria Peterson for the second consecutive election, having beaten her by just 47 votes in 2024. Everybody's been doubting me for years, and it just seems to keep working, McLaughlin said in an interview. So maybe it's the message. Maybe it's being genuine, authentic, and direct. And I've always tried to be that. It doesn't always rub everybody the right way, but with me, you know what you're going to get. McLaughlin is taking help from the House Republican organization this time after declining it 2 years in a row. This allows him more access to party staff and money, and he said he believes McCombie has improved her caucus's political operation. I want programs that are going to move the needle forward and get more butts in the seat, and I think people are moving in that direction. McLaughlin said, the communication success that I'm having individually is actually started to be replicated amongst the group. That same northwest suburban area is also the site of a tight Senate race between incumbent Senator Darby Hills, Republican Barrington Hills, and Representative Nabila Syed, Democrat Inverness. Curran also has other seats his caucus currently holds that he is trying to defend, but he said he's also hoping Frank Lesko will oust Senator Doris Turner, Democrat Springfield. Brad Beekman will defeat Senator Mike Halpin in Rock Island, and Daniel Ryan will send Senator Christopher Belt, Democrat Swansea, packing. McCombie declined to say how many seats she's aiming to pick up, but the 112th District, represented by Katie Stewart, Democrat Edwardsville, 76th District, represented by Representative Amy Breel, Democrat LaSalle, and 97th District, represented by Representative Jessica Dixon Heitman, Democrat Plainfield, are among her targets. Stewart is facing Jimmy Ford, and Breel is up against Liz Bishop for a second time. The 97th district was held by former Representative Harry Benton until early July when he resigned after a report by the Legislative Inspector General found he engaged in a pattern of sexual abuse. Benton beat Republican Gabby Shanahan by 4 points 2 years ago, and she told Capital News Illinois she thinks victory is now within reach. "I think we have a very good chance," said Shanahan, a grassroots engagement director for Americans for Prosperity. "Obviously, always a very winnable district for Republicans. And then I think people are just hungry for change. They're hungry for change and trust in government. They're hungry for transparency, accountability in government. I think that is what I offer." Ethics issues. Republicans are using Benton's allegations, as well as the federal indictment of Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat Urbana, against Democrats. The new chair of the Illinois Republican Party, Bob Grogan, said he's disappointed on ethical behavior continues to be an issue in the state. "I don't believe it as an opportunity. I think it's disgusting we even have to talk about it," Grogan said. "It's a vast disappointment, and we're going to point out the differences between the two parties." However, he cautioned Republicans against adopting old practices, where the party was a one-trick pony that largely focused on bashing former Speaker Mike Madigan. Even after Madigan's indictment before the 2022 election and conviction before the 2024 election, Republicans failed to win significant races. Curran said voters are also not singularly focused on ethics. "We're not hearing ethics at the door," he said. "We're hearing cost of living at the door. But ethics is something we want to come in with a strong plan and tackle in a veto session. It is past due. And what's going on in the House right now, it shows we are lagging. But really, what's on top of mind of voters is high taxes, cost of living, property taxes in particular." McCombie said Republicans should focus on both. "I think it's a combination. The affordability, property taxes, is a number one concern around the state," she said. New allegations. As the GOP kicked off fair events Thursday morning, another allegation against an incumbent Democrat surfaced. Laura Jackson, a former staffer for Representative Breel, alleged in a video interview released by Bishop's campaign that the representative harassed her and supplied drugs. Jackson, who worked on Breel's 2024 campaign and then in her district office for a time, claimed Breel referred to her as a possible sexual prize for winning the election. She also said Breel supplied unlimited Adderall throughout the campaign and then, as a state representative, gave out marijuana as a bonus. "There can be no repeat with Murray Breel," the House Republican organization said in a statement. "These allegations demand a serious response, and House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch should make clear immediately that Breel will not receive caucus support while they remain unresolved." In a statement, Breel denied the accusations and said they have been resolved. The statements in the video produced by her MAGA political operatives were previously taken to the Legislative Inspector General in 2025 and were found to be without merit, Breel said. "I am calling for the immediate release of the Legislative Inspector General's report on this matter." Legislative Inspector General Mike McCuskey confirmed to Capital News Illinois a complaint was filed more than a year ago and it was investigated. He declined to discuss the results. Turning to page 4, grad student charged with damaging campus flock cameras by Jana Wiersma, The News Gazette, Champaign-Urbana. Urbana. A University of Illinois graduate student has been charged with damaging two automated license plate readers on campus. Mitchell Bryant, 26, of Urbana, was arraigned Friday on one count of criminal damage to government-supported property, said Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz. The charge is a Class 3 felony due to the value of the damaged cameras. Bryant was arrested Thursday but is not being detained, Reitz told the News Gazette. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for today, Monday, September 24th. According to his LinkedIn profile, Bryant is a PhD candidate in bioengineering at the U of I. Reitz said on July 24th, yellow spray paint was used to cover the lenses of two Flock cameras, one in the 1000 block of West Green Street and one at the intersection of Wright and Springfield. UI investigators reviewed other surveillance cameras and on Champaign Area Mass Transit District buses. The footage showed that an individual used a can of spray paint attached to a pole with a cord to reach the license plate readers, which are 10 feet off the ground. They were able to track his movements and see that he left Everett Lab, went into a porta potty, put on a disguise, which included a face mask, sunglasses, and a hard hat, and then went to the cameras and, using the pole, spray painted the cameras, then went his way back to Everett Lab, where he used his iCard, Wright said. The News Gazette has reached out to UI Police but has yet to receive a response. According to the department's Flock Transparency portal, it has 20 license plate readers on campus. The portal states that the devices do not use facial recognition or detect people, gender, or race, and the following uses are prohibited: immigration enforcement, traffic enforcement, harassment or intimidation, usage based solely on a protected class, i.e. race, sex, or religion, or personal use. The website states that UI police use retroactive search to solve crimes after they've occurred, as well as real-time alerting of hot list vehicles to capture wanted criminals. Over the last 30 days, the department's plate readers detected over 160,000 unique vehicles. Some 142 searches were conducted during the time, and there were about 1,400 hot list hits. Hot list sources include the National Crime Information Center, Illinois Leads, and National Center for Missing and Exploited Children Amber Alerts. The Transparency Portal features a list of organizations that have been granted access to the department's license plate reader data. Turning to Section B, the sports section of the Monday, August 24th edition of the Pantograph, NFL Chicago Bears cameo appearance. Johnson gives starters quick look in preseason loss, by Brad Biggs, Chicago Tribune. Cincinnati, anything goes in preseason when coaches are looking for specific situations to evaluate players. So Chicago Bears coach Ben Johnson didn't hesitate leaving his offense on the field with 2.5 minutes remaining in the first half, and his team backed up on its 15-yard line facing 4th and 1 when third down conversions had been hard to come by. Running back Salvon Ahmed found enough space on the right side to move the chains, although the offense quickly punted. It sure looked as if the coaches were looking closely at Ahmed and 2023 fourth-round pick Brashawn Johnson in what turned out to be a 27-9 loss to the Cincinnati Bengals on Saturday night at Paycor Stadium. Here are thoughts on what the Bears learned during their long stay here and where they stand after the second preseason game, with one remaining and a host of roster moves coming quickly. 1. The Bears starters didn't come all this way to have only a sideline view of the action. Ben Johnson said earlier in the week playing time for his starters would hinge on how their work went in the joint practice with the Bengals on Thursday. What the coach didn't say at the time is the Bears aren't scheduled to practice again until Tuesday at Halas Hall, so that probably weighed in on the decision to run out a majority of the starters Saturday. Caleb Williams and the offensive starters were on the field for nine snaps, producing plays with a penalty, and produced a field goal. The defensive starters, most of them anyway, worked through a 14-play drive, 62-yard drive that 40-year-old Bengals backup quarterback Josh Johnson directed. So if you were keeping score of Bears starters versus Bengals backups, it was 3-3, as Bengals coach Zach Taylor held out his top units. From there, it was a bit of a slog. The Bears offense converted only 2 of 14 third downs, and the clean effort last week was anything but that, with 11 penalties for 81 yards. 2. Barring something unexpected, Braxton Jones looks like the starter at left tackle to open the season. Number 3. Rewind to the start of the off-season program, and everyone knew there was a major piece of business waiting to be done. That was a new contract for right tackle Darnell Wright. Is this another extension a possibility before the season started? If a deal is to be done before the September 13th opener at Carolina, Yandre Smith is the player to keep an eye on. Swift is entering the final year of the 3-year, $24 million contract he signed in free agency in 2024. Swift could go from being a player who a lot of folks wondered might not be a fit for new coach Ben Johnson to emerging as a building block for the near future. And 4, the Bears originally were going to make Ozzie Trapillo available to reporters before departing on this trip. That plan got nixed, and he was out of the locker room in a jiffy after Saturday's game, for which he didn't suit up. So we've yet to hear from last year's second-round pick about his ongoing and quite promising rehabilitation from a ruptured patella tendon. Looking for sports that will be on TV this evening, that includes Major League Baseball, Tampa Bay at Detroit on FS1 at 5:30 p.m., and at 8:45, also on FS1, the Reds versus the Giants. Regional Major League Baseball shows on the Marquee Sports Network, the Chicago Cubs at Arizona at 8:40 p.m., and on the Chicago Sports Network, Texas at the Chicago White Sox at 6:40 p.m. The WNBA has 2 games this evening. At 7 p.m. on USA, Golden State Valkyries versus the Minnesota Lynx, a battle of the 2 top teams in the league. And at 9 p.m. on Peacock and NBCSN, the Atlanta Dream versus the Los Angeles Spark. There's college women's volleyball at 4 p.m. on FS2 featuring number 4 Pittsburgh versus Xavier. And at 6 p.m. on FS2, featuring number 2 ranked Texas playing Marquette. And the Little League World Series continues with games on ESPN today, 4 of them, with teams to be determined, the games starting at noon, 2 p.m., 4 p.m., and 6 p.m. And from page 12, the Digest, National and World News, Nevada wildfire forces thousands to evacuate. Reno. Tens of thousands of people were evacuated this past weekend from the area around Reno, Nevada, and many others were under orders to leave Sunday as a wildfire reached the outskirts of the state's third most populous city. About 42,000 residents were displaced or in active evacuations, with an additional 45,000 in be prepared to evacuate status, as the Hawk Fire threatened northern Reno, local officials said Sunday. TV footage showed flames approaching roads. In eyewitness video verified by Reuters, smoke from the hills billowed over nearby neighborhoods. The fire burned 13,000 acres so far, officials said at a news conference. The fire was human-caused and remains under investigation, they said. And in election, Germany's far-right Alternative for Germany party is banking on a breakthrough in next month's state election to build momentum for a future national victory, the party's co-leader Alice Weidel said on Sunday. And the Gaza Strip, 2 Israeli airstrikes Sunday in the Gaza Strip killed at least 2 people, including a 4-year-old boy, and wounded 7 others, Palestinian health officials said, as Israel warned it would intensify strikes after what it said was launches of drones from Gaza toward Israel. We'll take a short break and return with the second half of the half hour of the reading of the Pantograph from Monday, August 24th, 2026. Please stay tuned.